From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of November 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, U.S. EPA has lowered the government-mandated cellulosic ethanol requirement for next year, because there is not enough of that advanced biofuel around to meet the original target. And speaking of ethanol, this time the type produced by the corn kernel, a coalition of organizations is asking Congress to let the blender's tax credit expire, saying economists predict it will have little impact on the price of gasoline. And while that may or may not be the case, farmers are more concerned about the price of a bushel of corn. Daryl Good has some thoughts on how letting the blender's tax credit expire might or might not change that number. Dave Dickey will have details of the coalition's push, and I'll bring you Daryl Good's view. It all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures for the soft red winter wheat at $6.50 up a quarter. The March at $6.90 up a quarter. And July at $7.28 up a quarter. Hard red at $7.73 finished 3 cents higher in the spring wheat, and the hard red December in the soft red, or hard red December in Kansas City at $7.30, up 3.5 cents. December corn futures back in Chicago, nearby contract 5:30, down 8.25. The March at 5:44, down 9.25. May corn at 5:51.5, down 9.75. And July at 5:55.5, 9.75 lower. December corn futures of next year, 6.5 cents lower at $5.03. January soybeans at $12.43, up 8 today. March at 12:51.5, 8 higher. And the May at 12:53, up 8. July soybeans 12:55.75, 6.5 cents higher. The November contract at $11.62, up 4 cents. December bean meal future settled $3.38.60, up $2.30. December bean oil at $50.65, 78 cents higher. Mercantile exchange December live cattle $103.75, up $1.05 for the afternoon. And the January feeders at 119.17.5, up 77.5 cents. December lean hogs a dollar lower at $69.02. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like. At this hour, crude oil futures trading at $84.27 a barrel, down $1.46. Ethanol at $2.10.6, down 3.4. And the natural gas at 4.18 and 9, 2.1 cents lower. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.31 and 6, down 4.1 cents. And the gold futures for the day, a settlement price up $19 at $1,385 even. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,028, just about 25 points lower. And the dollar at 81.19 is up 0.35. The CRB index at 301.41 is down 1.48 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for Urbana-Champaign. It says this afternoon should be a few scattered flurries today. Cloudy, a steady temperature around 31 degrees, west winds at 17 miles an hour. A gust as high as 24, and then tonight a chance of flurries. Cloudy, a low of 21, west winds again between 14 and 16, gusting to a high of 23. Tomorrow should be cloudy, gradually becoming mostly sunny. The high tomorrow, same 31 degrees, west winds between 11 and 17, gusting to 26. Wednesday night, partly cloudy skies, a low of 18, west winds between 6 and 10, and then on Thursday a chance of flurries. Mostly cloudy, a high near 35 degrees, west winds between 6 and 8. Thursday night should be partly cloudy, a low of 19. Friday, mostly sunny, a high near 34 degrees. The extended forecast into Friday night calls for scattered flurries, mostly cloudy, a low of 26. Saturday, a chance of snow, a high of 36. Saturday night, cloudy, a low of 27. And on Sunday, should be partly sunny with a high of 35 degrees. More with the weather when we talk to Don Day at the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Maggie Robesky in Morris at 815-941-3725. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Get all your Christmas lights up?
Not quite. I wish I could say yes, because the weather's telling me I was too slow.
Yeah, you were too slow, and it's going to be cold the rest of the week. Well, that's the way it goes.
We're 85% done.
Well, 85. I've seen your place. 85% of the way done is 150% for most people, so congratulations on that part, I suppose. Hey, speaking of being done, are farmers 85% sure that they're going to leave their bin doors closed at the moment?
I think that there's very little talk of opening bin doors on anything that wasn't already contracted. As of right now, Todd, the phone lines have been awfully quiet ever since Thanksgiving here. Well, we haven't seen, they haven't been ringing off the wall on Monday or Tuesday here this week. And everybody is sort of the feeling they want to let just a little time go by here as the holiday doldrum sort of set in. But the funds weren't that way today. They decided they wanted to get rid of some corn and had corn futures set their first monthly lower close since June. So we saw a little sell-off in the corn market.
That was kind of an important event. The corn did close out a month lower than it had. I think that's, I didn't look at it, but I was listening to, talking to Greg Johnson yesterday, and of course he told us that it had been 4 months up, and so this on the fifth month was a lower close. On the flip side, soybeans finished higher, and they finished the month higher, too.
The soybeans had a good trade today. We had COFCO out of China basically said they're going to continue to import soybeans, and their appetite staying very strong for them, while on the other side they said that they didn't plan on importing much corn this year, and that the idea was that they were having a good crop and looking at it and trying to stay as self-sufficient as possible as far as the corn goes. And then on the other side, the gold was up good. The crude oil was up, or crude oil was up early, then it was sold off and was down. It's down about $1.50 now. And those two things, along with China basically saying they didn't care to buy much corn, and the idea that there's going to be more feed wheat available out of Australia and out of Canada, and what was being said today sort of put a dent in the corn market.
Yeah, I did read that. What was the basis behind Canada discussing feed wheat availability and the difference between that and the millable wheat and why Canada would come out with such a comment? Do you know?
We're not quite sure why they come out with the comment. We knew that they had some trouble during harvest, extra moisture up there, and some harvest delays going on, and that some of their wheat might not be of the highest quality. But you generally don't find them saying that, other than if they know they're going to have to come out with that as feed wheat, and also that they want to see the milling quality wheat reach a premium up there.
Yeah, so that'll put pressure on corn, the feed grains in particular, because it's adding to the feed supply globally. And on the flip side, as you mentioned, COFCO and China saying, we're okay. We had a pretty good corn crop. We can make it through whatever time frame. Do you believe them at this point?
They are tremendously intelligent people as to drive the market their way with some of their comments, Todd, and we'll leave it at that. I think that, we're surprised they've been as aggressive and forthright saying they're going to buy as many beans as they have. The beans also got a boost today from a fresh sale announcement of 165,000 metric tons to an unknown. Unknown has generally turned out to be China. And also, we got 29-month highs in the palm oil futures, which is keeping the crush margins up as far as the bean oil goes, too.
Anything new on Argentina and the dry conditions for both corn, soybeans, and I suppose their winter wheat crop?
Well, they ended the month with about 50% of the amount of moisture that's averaged down there, and last month being a dry month, too. So there's a lot of concerns just as to if this is a La Nina year, if the rain keeps blowing normal, are the South American crops in some sort of jeopardy as far as being cut back because of moisture? And, of course, there's risk there that way. Of course, we've seen a great recharging of highly deficit moisture in our area here and great before the freeze come in to get some moisture back in the ground here.
Indeed. You mentioned that the funds were the big liquidators for the day or the sellers. Was it the commercials on the other side?
I think that there was some commercial buying at lower levels down here. We know that one of the advisory firms did buy some July corn today, basically on the low, and where it closed that way to go along some positions as far as that goes. But all in all, we saw somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 contracts liquidated by the funds today.
Anything? Are you in the belief that this is a sideways trade for a while? And if it is, do you have your livestock producers locking in any of their inputs?
I am of that thought. For right now, I think it is a sideways move. We have locked in some of our feed usage numbers here, just feeling that we can feel safe at these, especially with the numbers of livestock selling for. That's better to have a profit that way. So, we still feel there's going to be tight stocks come spring here. But for right now and for the next 2-3 weeks, it's going to be hard to get a big rally going in this corn market.
Wayne, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Now, if you'd like to hear what Wayne had to say again, you can do that in two ways. Visit our website. The address, you know it, is willag.org. That's willag.org. Or you can dial this phone number. It's 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. It's just a voicemail updated at 10:15 and 3:15 daily with either the opening or closing numbers and a bit of analysis. Now, here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency yesterday set at 6.6 million gallons the amount of cellulosic ethanol that must be blended into the fuel supply in 2011, much less than mandated by Congress, and more evidence of the struggle to produce the fuel in large volumes. Congress had mandated that 250 million gallons of cellulosic ethanol be added next year, but without any large-scale commercial plants, the supply is not available. The U.S. Energy Department has yet to approve a loan guarantee for one of the biggest planned projects, which is backed by oil company BP PLC. A group of environmentalists, hunger groups, livestock producers, food companies, taxpayer organizations, and others have asked that Congress allow the 45-cent volumetric ethanol excise tax credit to expire on December 31st. The blender's credit is given to blenders for every gallon of ethanol blended with gasoline. The group indicated that the industry does not need the credit because the industry already has the renewable fuels standard. The letter in part says, quote, "At a time of spiraling deficits, we do not believe Congress should continue subsidizing gasoline refiners for something that they already are required to do, and that leading economists agree that ending it would have little impact on ethanol production prices or jobs." China's National Development and Reform Commission today says that China has no need to implement price controls for now because other measures to curb inflation have already yielded initial results. It added that any price controls, if implemented, would be only temporary. China's consumer price inflation sped to a 25-month high in October, rising 4.4% from a year earlier. There is market talk that the number edged even higher in November. China's announcement earlier this month that it might turn to price controls has met strong criticism from economists. The NDRC, however, defended price controls as a viable policy option. Oil World Today says that dry weather in Argentina is not yet causing serious alarm about the state of that country's soybean plantings, but there is danger of downward revision to forecasts of the country's 2011 harvest. Dry weather in the past weeks have forced farmers to stop planting in Argentina, the world's third largest soybean producer. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason with this one extra news note on the afternoon. The U.S. Senate this morning approved the Food Safety Modernization Act that will increase the ability of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, that's the FDA, to recall contaminated foods, increase inspections, and require accountability of food producers across the country. The bill passed by a vote of 73-25 after an amendment was made to exempt small farmers who make less than $500,000 a year in sales. While the FDA is responsible for 80% of the nation's food supply, the bill does not rule on meat and poultry processing plants, of course, which are under the jurisdiction of the United States Department of Agriculture. A similar House bill passed last year, and now the two must be reconciled before being presented to the president to sign into law. On the matter of the USDA, it is still releasing the weekly crop progress and weather reports. In this morning's weather summary, it showed that heavy rain has helped recharge soil moisture in drought-affected areas from the northern delta into the eastern Corn Belt. Weekly rainfall generally totaled 2 to 6 inches from central Arkansas and northern Mississippi northeastward into Ohio. Some of the heaviest rain fell in the hardest-hit drought areas from the Missouri Boot Heel into the lower Ohio Valley. Those, of course, are all primary winter wheat-growing regions, soft red winter wheat in particular. Nationally, USDA says winter wheat of all types has now advanced its emergence to 94% complete. That's 5 points ahead of last year, 2 points ahead of the five-year average. Overall, 45% of the winter wheat crop reported in good to excellent condition. Those ratings are unchanged from last week, but still remain 16 points behind this same time last year. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Up next, we'll hear from Daryl Good about crop fundamentals.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Corn, soybean, and wheat prices dropped sharply following the spike higher November the 9th. The nearby December corn contract dropped nearly a dollar in 2 weeks. The lead option soybean contract dropped about $1.50, and wheat futures were off too, down $1.36. Commodity analysts have pointed to many reasons for the decline and the wide swing in prices. These include uncertainty about Chinese demand, fluctuating currency values, trade activity of the commodity speculators, and the La Nina weather event. The market, the mass of people betting on whether prices should go higher or lower or not at all, thanks Daryl Good, appears to be having some difficulty identifying the value of commodities.
The value of the U.S. dollar is thought to have an impact on the demand for and or prices of U.S. crops through the export market. A lower valued dollar relative to the value of other currencies makes U.S. commodities more competitive in the world market. That impact is diminished for soybeans, however, for at least two reasons. First, South American soybeans are also valued in U.S. dollars in the world market. Second, China is the largest importer of soybeans, and the value of the Chinese currency has also remained low. It is also apparent that the quantity of Chinese imports is ultimately based on meeting domestic needs.
Those needs are currently very large, says the U of I's Daryl Good. He argues the price of the dollar has less impact psychologically and statistically than many might believe. The same goes for the case of the corn market, although it involves a different country in Asia.
The impact of currency values on U.S. corn exports is muted by the fact that the largest importer, Japan, buys about the same amount of U.S. corn each year, regardless of price or currency values. The price impact of export demand of corn is also diminished by the sharp decline in the percentage of the U.S. crop that is exported.
Exports this year are expected to account for only 14.5% of total consumption of U.S. corn. That leaves wheat as it relates to the dollar. The value of the U.S. dollar likely has a larger influence on wheat exports, concedes the Ag Economist, because of the very competitive market characterized by a large number of importers and exporters. The second potential impact of the value of the U.S. dollar is on the price of crude oil, which is priced in dollars in the world market. Changing crude oil, and therefore gasoline prices, can impact the blending margins for ethanol and influence the demand for corn. Over a wide price range for gasoline, however, ethanol blending is profitable as a result of the blender's tax credit. This tax credit, then, is more important than the price of gasoline in the economics of blending. And that, says Darrell Good, makes the fate of the blender's tax credit, set to expire December the 31st of this year, a major source of uncertainty for the corn market. Now, current forecasts are that ethanol production during the 2010-11 corn marketing year will be well above the mandated level. An elimination of the tax credit increases the possibility that production would decline toward the mandated level, depending on the future economics of blending. Still, demand for corn, and for that matter for soybeans and wheat too, domestically and globally, remains strong. It likely means the price for all three crops will be supported by the potential for strong export demand as well as the risk of production shortfalls for corn and soybeans in Argentina and winter wheat in the United States. And by the way, you can read Darrell Good's thoughts on the Weekly Outlook each Monday afternoon if you'd like. It's also put there as a podcast. Just visit the Farm Doc website at www.farmdoc.illinois.edu. Let's switch now from row crops to Christmas trees. The Christmas tree now standing on the Capitol lawn in Washington, D.C., made its way across the nation in the last few weeks, and just before its final destination was reached, it stopped at the National 4-H Conference Center, about a mile from Washington. And then, as you'll hear in this report from the United States Department of Agriculture, it took its final place on the Capitol lawn.
The 18-wheeler flatbed truck carrying the U.S. Capitol Christmas tree is here.
Wyoming finally got a tree.
That's right. For the first time in the 64-year history of the Capitol Christmas tree, the woody perennial hails from Wyoming. Senators Michael Enzi and John Barrasso are quite proud.
Very exciting for Wyoming.
It was terrific. It was just terrific.
Stephen Ayers is the architect of the Capitol.
It's an honor and privilege for me to accept this wonderful Engelmann spruce.
The 83-year-old, 67-foot-tall, 9,000-pound tree is from the Bridger-Teton National Forest. The west front lawn of the Capitol will be home for the tree through New Year's. In the coming days, the tree will be decorated with mega strands of LED lights and 5,000 or so ornaments made by the people from across Wyoming. The public is invited next week, December 7th, for the official lighting of the tree by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. For USDA Radio, Susan Carter at the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason in the Urbana-Champaign campus studios of Illinois Public Media. Back in 2 minutes with a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's National Moose Day. It's also St. Andrew's Day, patron of fishermen. This day in agricultural history in 1838 marked the Great Pastry War. The conflict between Mexico and France was caused by a French pastry cook who claimed that some Mexican army soldiers had damaged his restaurant. The Mexican government refused to pay for the damages. France decided to do something about it and sent a fleet to Veracruz and fired on the fortress outside the harbor. France was eventually, with the help of Great Britain, paid a payment of 600,000 pesos for the damages. In 1866, John Mercer died, an English chemist. He invented a process for treating cotton that made it stronger and shrink-resistant. In 1875, A.J. Erickson patented an oat-crushing machine, which used a series of horizontal knives to shear the grain. In 1899, Andrew Moyer was born, an American microbiologist. He invented a method for mass-producing penicillin. While working for USDA, he discovered a technique for antibiotic fermentation through the continuous shaking of corn steep liquor and lactose. And in 1967, Casimir Funk died. Funk was a Polish-American biochemist who came up with the word vitamine, later changed to vitamin. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Let's start with the Midwest. A little rainfall, actually quite a little bit of rainfall here in my part of the world. How widespread was that over the last couple of days?
Well, it was not bad in terms of coverage. I would say that 75 to 85% of the areas that you just mentioned got measurable precipitation. It was a fairly quick-moving system, though, and that did limit amounts a little bit.
And then it's colder now. Will it stay that way?
Yeah, it is going to stay that way. In fact, for most of the lower 48 states over the next 10 days, temperatures are going to be averaging below normal just about coast to coast. Only maybe northern New England and some parts of the desert southwest will have near-normal temperatures. And this is going to be found really throughout the whole northern hemisphere. Sweden looking at a cold wave that may break 100-year-old records. And it is getting colder, and we've got a lot of cold air in the northern higher latitudes. So it does look like December will be off to a chilly start.
Will that have an impact on northern winter wheat crops anyplace, you think, in terms of it's awful early for winter kill? But if it comes in this early, I suppose that could be a serious problem.
Well, put it this way, it looks cold, but I wouldn't call it brutally cold to where we would get temperatures that would cause problems like that. And we also did see some snow with this latest system in some of those northern winter wheat areas that will get a little more snow. So there is snow cover, which will help protect it somewhat from the hard cold.
Let's move to South America and Argentina in particular. They have been dry. Any relief in the offing?
Well, they've gotten drier, as you just mentioned, and they're not going to see a lot of precipitation next week to 10 days. There is some shower activity in the central and northern areas that's expected. However, overall, the trend of drier weather in Argentina is going to continue. It's gotten a little drier in Brazil as well, although Brazil's chances for rain will be better.
Any place else around the globe we ought to take a look at before I let you go for the day?
Australia, not looking bad in terms of precipitation, especially the central, southern, and eastern areas of that country.
Thank you so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great day.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.